It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And it's my great pleasure to welcome on the phone Zaz Hollander. Thank you for calling in, Zaz.
Good to be here, Mike.
And in the studio, Mark Kelsey. Thank you for coming into the studio, Mark.
Good morning, Mike and Zaz.
So there are at least two big issues that seem to have a continuing interest for people. I know that last we heard from you, Zaz, you were traveling up the road in the direction of falling timber. Do you have any addition on that whole question that's been of interest to a lot of people?
I was headed to Talkeetna for a Denali story. I haven't been out to the timber sale site yet and don't have very much new info on that, but certainly people are watching very closely to see what planning staff do in terms of the transportation plan that Denali Timber Management is still required to file as to how they're going to transport those logs from the Chugach Creek timber sale to the port on Oil Well Road, which is raising quite a bit of local concern.
Okay, and of course that will come up when the next borough assembly meeting happens. And they've been playing with the schedule a bit. I'm not sure I even saw where it settled. It was going to be the 1st and the 8th. I think they're only having one of those because they have a series of budget meetings as well. But we can expect next week and the following week to have a lot of that discussion happen. Mark, you had a question.
I do. I maybe even have two questions. So I'm not quite understanding how this goes forward. The logging operation has been approved. Is it then contingent on a transportation plan?
That's basically right.
So there's
the contract for the timber sale and the lease at the port were both approved, but the actual transporting logs can't start, which wouldn't start now anyway, until that transportation plan is cleared. And the assembly made that clear. Their approval was contingent on that, the transportation plan.
And the full assembly will examine and at some point approve a transportation plan. Is that how
no,
it goes?
If I remember right, that was an amendment that failed. That the planning staff, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong. I may be misremembering the details. It's the planning staff that's going to approve it. The assembly will review that decision, but will not vote on it.
Right, right. Unless there's some problem that pops up with it, I think as with with a number of other issues, the assembly is, I believe, leaning in the direction of having the appropriate decisions be made by the staff administration. And in this case, they've basically said, you have the authority to do it. And if there's something that comes up that is extraordinary, but we put it in that extraordinary character, like anything, then we might go and take a look. But basically, I think it's turned over to planning.
And has a transportation plan been submitted to the planning committee, or is that pending?
They submitted the transportation plan the day of the assembly vote.
Oh.
Is there an expected timeline for getting it reviewed and passed?
I think it was a 30-day.
Yeah.
There's a comment period.
So we should be coming up with it possibly in the – well, obviously – in that time frame. Well, Zaz, I'm interested, since you didn't make it to the timber, and I don't think you made it to the top of Denali, but you were following up on a topic which has been of interest to people, particularly around the mountain. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, and it's a topic of interest to, I think, anyone in a climbing community on a mountain like Denali or Everest or Vincent or any of the popular peaks in the Cascades, et cetera, is the whole love to death compounded by altitude, elevation, and logistics. So Denali has been climbed since, at least popularly climbed since Washburn pioneered the West Buttress Route in 1951. And since then there have been metric tons and tons of human waste piling up on the glacier, the Kahiltna Glacier that underlies most of that route. And research over the years has showed that when you put poop in a crevasse, it doesn't go away. It doesn't biodegrade, but it also doesn't get pulverized by the glacier because it's not down at that kind of grinding zone at bedrock. And so it just stays there, and at some point it comes back out.
Oh.
So the Park Service for years has been trying to figure out how to deal with this. About 10 years ago, I don't have it in front of me right now, but they basically implemented a new and really sweeping policy where you had to haul your waste off from high camp, so from the summit. Basically, you couldn't just leave it up there, which, you know, if you're summiting a 20,000-some-odd-foot peak, you know, the tallest mountain in North America, you're up against a lot of challenges. It's really cold, it's really windy, and you're exhausted at that point and at altitude. So that was a big deal. And so now they have a new change this season where if you're going up the West Buttress, let's say a team of three, you each have to take up at least one clean mountain can, which looks kind of like a bear-proof canister, but a little bit smaller, and with webbing, elastic webbing to strap down the lid. And you have to take one of those plus an extra for the team and use them only, except once you're above 14,000 feet, there is one poor sacrifice crevasse that you can use to dump your waste in. And so that is kind of moving toward a getting all waste off the mountain or finding a better way to deal with it over time. But at this point, the Park Service knows that they're already that we are all already facing a lot of unpleasant surprises popping up. And maybe as soon as like this year or, you know, near term, but 70 years is the forecast for when the waste will start surfacing.
So you've done a nice job of summarizing this issue, Zaz. I compliment you. I'm wondering if you've picked up any reaction of pushback or applause about this action.
Well, it's just starting this year to be officially implemented. There was a trial period last year where teams could voluntarily agree to give it a try. And they kept a log book. The ranger who is in charge of this, Roger Robinson, the clean climbing mountaineering ranger, is just a fascinating guy who's just really, really obsessed with this issue. And he's 64 now. You know, he climbed Denali for the first time in 75. He started working for the park in 1980. He's been there for a long time, and he knows and loves the mountain. You know, he is obviously a booster, but was very organized, I think, in implementing and rolling this out. And so, yeah, the comments in the book were mostly positive, and a lot of climbers that we talked to last week at Talkeetna, as they were kind of getting ready for the season to start, a number of the climbers we talked to were not going up West Buttress because it was a little early for that. There was one group, a male-female, who were young, 22-year-olds, but very experienced already, going up the Cassine Ridge, which is a really technical way up to the top. So that was fascinating, just talking to them and sitting in on their safety briefing with a ranger who is himself like one of the premier climbers in the world. And they're going to have to do the same thing with their waste once they're back on the West Buttress. But when they're on the actual ridge, you know, they are allowed to go as far off the route as possible. I mean, it's a 9,000 rock spine that they're climbing. But once they're back on that, you know, more used West Buttress route, they were hauling up their clean climbing cans just like everybody else. They had no problem with it. I think the one place where there may be friction is on less experienced teams, but most of them are with guides. And so the guides, you know, can tell them what to do. The reason that the Park Service is still allowing that one crevasse to be used is because of inexperienced teams at Windy Corner, which is, I think, at about 13,000 feet. So there's a series of camps up Denali where you stop and camp and get ready to head up or down. And so there's one at 11,000 and another just above 14. And so this will allow teams coming down from 14 to dump all their waste so that instead of an 8-pound can each, they have about a 2-pound can, which, you know, could make a difference with an already loaded sled as they try to navigate kind of the tricky terrain at Windy Corner. I didn't hear any immediate backlash, but I don't think I was talking to pretty stout climbers who weren't going up West Buttress, who were sort of self-sustaining. And one of them said something like, well, you know, we're climbers. We're kind of used to difficult, weird conditions. So, you know, having to poop in a can is no big deal.
And will there be any kind of enforcement? Is there arranger at the bottom checking cans?
No, but there's patrols. They're regular mountaineering ranger patrols that are starting this week. And so, you know, those guys will be looking to see. They can't see everything, obviously, but, you know, there are tickets involved if you get caught not using your can.
Oh, the imagery. Okay, thank you for that detail, Zaz. I appreciate that.
Anytime. I tried not to use the word poop more than a couple times in that
right.
story.
You did well. Well, let's swing back here to Palmer, because you wrote a piece about the Tuesday Palmer City Council meeting. And we were there. I was one of the 110 people crammed into the room. We streamed it, recorded it, and videoed it. So for those people who still have an interest in listening to some of the testimony or the discussion by the council, if you go to the RadioFreePalmer.org website, the video is up there, and it came out pretty well, I think. And we also followed up with a specific interview with Nate Wallace, the city manager, which is also up on the website, 1.5 hour devoted to his observations after the fact of the meeting. But let's start with the piece that you did, because you sort of summarized the ironic component of the decision that was made on Tuesday, Zaz.
Yeah, and I was actually going to say, you know, good for you, Mike, because my story, I wasn't able to go to council, and so my story did not summarize any of the testimony at the meeting, and I expect there was some new information that hadn't been summarized at the hearing before, and so I was going to encourage people, yes, to go to your feeds to get the straight from the horse's mouth. But so what I decided to do was just to kind of ground truth how realistic this range in that location really is. And it sounds like pretty close to zero. And Valkyrie, the owner of Valkyrie, Larry Clark, was pretty clear about that at that first hearing. And I think there was some question, well, maybe he's just trying to leverage a decision. But he has since given me some information that shows that it does look like he was interested in that location. U-Haul was interested, was kind of in there, and didn't need a permit, a noise permit. You know, they would need some kind of a building permits if they're changing structures inside. But anyway, and so by not getting his noise permit ASAP, Larry has basically said that he is, unless something goes really sideways with U-Haul, he's at this point no longer considering that location. And so, you know, it's sort of much ado about nothing, although obviously the process has to be followed. But it was just starting to feel to me like people were getting maybe unduly concerned about something that wasn't going to happen.
That was certainly my take on it. I did not attend in person, but as a spectator from afar, especially after this week, it seemed like a lot of fuss over something that really did not merit that kind of fuss, you know, given that there was no offer tendered on the building yet. It seemed to me like they were putting the cart before the horse a bit.
Well, one of the, I think I'll summarize a couple of points made by the city manager and others. This was the lifting up of a tarp that had been thrown that is over all of the ordinances and guidelines of zoning, and it was just I thought a reminder that the very various zoning regulations that the city of Palmer does are set up, they're done, and they're reviewed from time to time, and the P and Z for the city of Palmer right now, that group is reviewing, working through R1, R2, R3, go to commercial, and all of the guidelines that are there that are used by the city manager to make decisions when things appear to see whether they fit under those guidelines or whether in some way the proposal should come to the city council or the Planning and Zoning Commission. So one of the things that I think emerged here was that I'd say there is a lot of energy around the term shooting range in downtown Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that emerged is that the somewhat vague proposal that was being made and understood by people who were reacting, didn't appreciate the point that many have made is this was a retail establishment that had a shooting range, that the whole complex had to work or it wasn't going to work. In fact, I think the city manager stated very explicitly that if it had just been a shooting range, someone wanted to put a shooting range there, it would have been treated very differently. But it was being treated as a retail, which a retail establishment, and taken from there. I think it's also important to note that the Planning and Zoning Group is going to have an opening starting April, May 8th. And there's an opportunity for someone to join the group that's doing this. And in any case, even if a person does not want to be part of that process directly, making clear that all of these guidelines that are used here, that are instructions for the city manager, are subject to review, being reviewed, and a commentary certainly can be provided to P&Z or to the city council before they're finished. So if there's a concern, I think this term shooting range and place it in downtown Palmer and say, well, really, we want to set this up so the shooting ranges cannot be in downtown Palmer. If that were the goal, you could see how and if that could be done. So I think the result for me is a realization that there are a whole set of guidelines that are sitting there, and that sometimes it takes a concern about a imagined possibility or real possibility that will draw people's attention and say, you know, maybe we more than just a few people should look at and comment about this. Mark?
Yeah. Has there been any talk, you know, by Valkyrie about where they might go from here? Is there another site?
Zaz, you've had some communication, anything there?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I talked with Larry Clark after the first hearing where the decision on the permit was delayed and, you know, asked him what happens if you don't get this particular building. And he said, well, we've got contingency plans. And some of those plans involved existing property, but it also involved, vacant property, land to be developed.
Okay.
So it sounds like, I mean, that building is at least offered at $6.5 million. So his business is doing well enough, I would think. But he did that location, I think the heavy concrete walls, there were, you know, aspects of it. But the letter he sent me said, we would like the public to know Valkyrie will be moving forward with our vision and project, unfortunately, in a different Matsu Valley location. So there's no guarantee that'll be in Palmer or near Palmer.
Okay.
But I would think it'll be in the core area, obviously.
And, of course, so far we've been talking about two proposals. There's a third proposal because Richard Stryken did appear at mm-hmm. that meeting, and my information suggests that he is continuing to pursue a proposal that he's making. Whether that stands in a second position to U-Haul or how that's going to work, that may emerge as well. So in any case, there was certainly interest, energy. And if you were in the room, I must say that 110 people, all and by the way, it was standing room only. In order to get 110 people in there, you had to take half the chairs out. So what we're saying is that we had about half that population of people standing for well over 2 hours, and then being pretty polite. I think the mayor did a wonderful job of running the public hearing and so on. People had a chance to talk. And many people also, I think I could generalize by saying, if you listen, you may hear the people said, oh, we're not opposed to gun ranges. We just don't want it here in downtown Palmer. So we'll leave that topic, and I'd like to move on to something that that I participated in that was very interesting. And that was on Thursday morning out at the Borough Assembly Chambers. There was a morning meeting, ran from about 8:30 to noon, and it's what is called the Smart Communities Group. And this group has 150 different members. It alternates meeting about once every 3 months, either in Anchorage or out here, and it's been in existence for a couple of years. And what it's attempting to do, and I think successfully, is share the information about how big data systems and portals and such can be worked so that whether you're talking to a utility like MEA or MTA, or if you're approaching the borough and attempting to get information, or looking at the city of Palmer or the city of Wasilla, that you're not going to have to go to a lot of different places to get the information. That there will be an agreement about how to structure both the portals that allow you access and information sharing. And a number of cities around the country have, and larger entities, have been doing this very successfully. So that, and the simple matter, for example, if you come across a pothole now and you either strike it as you're driving down the road or swerve and avoid it, what do you do with that information other than file it away? Well, in a system that's set up that allows you to easily report that, you then have an opportunity to get attention on that, especially if you've got 400 or 500 people that are saying, I've just seen this big pothole, and it rises to the level of response, for example. Well, this group meets. It met out here, and I want to I just commend participation because the city of Palmer's there. The borough has people there. And, of course, a lot of this is built upon a longstanding project that involves a GIS that gives you information about where things are, whether you're talking about houses and locations, whether you're talking about potholes or anything of that sort. Mark or Zaz, were you aware at all about this effort?
I have not heard a thing about it.
Yeah, I saw that the meeting was happening, but was, as usual, buried in breaking news. It is that the mapping that the borough has been able to do, I know when Steve Colligan was on the assembly, he was a big proponent. But Alex Strawn is a genius with maps, and so we're lucky to have him as a public servant.
So if any listeners are interested in ways that the government is moving to improve transparency and access, I would recommend they contact the borough. Eric Wyatt, who's their chief information officer there, is a good contact person. Just wanted to make sure people were aware that that's happening in a way that's very thoughtful, that is looking at the variety of experiences from other cities, whether it's Austin, Texas, or places in California or anywhere around the country. There are a number of proven approaches that have helped people get information, improve efficiencies, et cetera, and that's just one of those things that are happening. Well, I want to finish up with perhaps this question of the Salmon Initiative. As we're speaking here, I know that the Supreme Court of the state of Alaska is working on determining whether an initiative will appear on the ballot in November that seems to have caused considerable reaction, both from the standpoint of people who are very concerned about ensuring that salmon remain a part of the Alaska scene, and also a reaction against this initiative by developers in particular, who and others, including the state of Alaska, who see if the initiative were to pass, there would be some significant restriction on what can be done with Alaska land. Zaz, have you looked at that at all?
I haven't yet.
Okay. So then just this is a heads up for people, because I think taking it all the way to the Supreme Court is a major step, in part because what's being discussed is a set of changes to the initiative that the court would recommend. And that's kind of a fascinating thing when you have a ballot initiative proposal that's taken around the state and receives signatures in a particular language, and you bring it forward, and then the court says, well, we'll change a little bit this or that. I think that question in itself is one that raises a lot of eyebrows. Mark?
Is anybody squawking about it?
Oh, yes. It's in discussion, and the people, and by the way, I believe the gentleman who put this together is Mike Wood from up in the Tucking area. So
is the court saying it needs these tweaks to, you know, pass constitutional muster?
Exactly. That's essentially the position being taken by the opponents of having the language be as it presently is to put on the ballot. They're saying this is a constitutional issue restricting the ability of the legislature, which has the responsibility in terms of land use. And so we're raising kind of an interesting set of questions. It's a heads up. The Supreme Court will be dealing with it, and it's quite possible we'll be able to speak to it at additional Valley editions. Okay, well, we have managed somehow to get through this time talking about things at the highest level and perhaps at a lower level. Zaz, I want to thank you for taking the time to call in and share your experience.
Of course, it's always a pleasure.
And I want to thank Mark Kelsey for coming to the studio and participating in the discussion as well.
Have a good weekend, everyone.
Okay, well, we'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.